जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय गोपी जन यशोदनन्दन प्रभजनरञ्जन यशोदनन्दन प्रभजनरञ्जन जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय विष्णु पाद परमहंस गुरु विवेकाचार्य अष्टोत्तर शत शिष्य मध्य दिवान ग्रेस एसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी श्री प्रभुपाद की समवेद भक्तवृंद की जय। निताय गौर प्रेमानंद, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to Sri Sri Guru Vandava, all glories to Sri Prabhupada. Okay. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nitinamne Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Dveshakarine जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद, हरे कृष्णा कृष्ण कृष्ण हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे। थैंक यू ऑल फॉर कमिंग टू भगवद गीता क्लास दिस संडे फीस्ट। सॉरी आई हैव अ बैड कोल्ड एंड कॉफ, सो प्लीज एक्सक्यूज माय intermittent coughing. So we're going to talk today about material reality versus spiritual reality. I should preface that by saying that all of us sitting here by default accept that we exist. We're sitting here, you're looking at me, you're perceiving that I am on this Vyasasana, you're hearing me with your ears. There is no question in your mind that you don't exist. Somehow or the other we find ourselves in the material world. Maybe we were born at, not maybe, definitely we were born at some day in the past, and we celebrate that as our birthday, and that's who we know as ourselves. So in other words, I am this person, born in this country, male, female, at this date and this time. We have no problems accepting that we exist. We have no problems accepting that we are in this reality, this three-dimensional space, sitting on the floor, sitting on the chair, under the fans, the lights. But if you think about it, it's quite absurd to accept our reality without challenging it. Who am I? What am I doing here? Why is space three-dimensional? Why should human beings have two eyes and one nose and one mouth? Why? Why am I able to even think? Why am I able to even ask questions like this? We go through our lives drifting, we drift, we just accept the status quo, this is who I am, and without questioning much, till we come to spiritual knowledge, and then kind of roils our brains, questions start to crop up. Maybe we had the questions without access to spiritual knowledge, but we didn't have answers to them. Spiritual knowledge offers answers if it is properly administered, if the answers are properly given by self-realized persons. The question is whether we can process those answers and be aware and alert of those answers as we go through our lives. It's all good to talk about, I'm not the body, I'm the soul. But as soon as we leave this room, the curtain of Maya falls again, and it becomes difficult to remember that I am not the body, that I am the soul. So it's quite the Maya, that which is not, the energy of Krishna that keeps us in illusion about ourselves, is very strong. The illusion is thick in the air. And so the Bhagavad Gita and hearing the Bhagavad Gita and being with devotees and discussing these topics with devotees is of paramount importance if we want to elevate ourselves from the thick illusion that surrounds us. So, material reality is our reality, primarily. We are sitting in this room. Everything around us is matter, our bodies are matter. The way we are perceiving knowledge and information is material. Now, there's also a spiritual reality, which a lot of people balk at. I don't believe in God, I can't see God. The gates of heaven are just an imagination. But just as we have no qualms accepting that we exist in this reality now, why should we have a problem, at least theoretically, supposing that there is a spiritual reality? There is a place just like this, but fundamentally different in that it is not made of matter, not made of atoms. But there is a place where people are sitting, eating, enjoying happily, doing their things, going about their things, their duties, their activities of the day. There is another type of reality, according to the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is a spiritual reality, quite different from the material, and yet similar in some ways. So I'm going to hopefully touch on this topic today. We shouldn't be too quick to dismiss the possibility of a spiritual world and of spiritual people, because we have accepted the absurd possibility that we exist in this world. That was the point I'm trying to make. So let's look at this presentation today. The topic is material reality versus spiritual reality. This person, anybody recognizes what he's wearing on his eyes? What is it? Virtual reality. These things are very popular. You can buy them on Amazon. So $30. These are virtual reality visors. So this person is wearing it. When you wear these virtual reality things, you are in a three-dimensional space, which is a made-up space in which you live and move and act and experience. You are having a three-dimensional real experience, but it's virtual, it's not real. So, you can choose a character, one of these characters, for example. These are not real characters, but you can choose to be one of them. Okay, and then once you make your choice, you can choose whatever you want to be, whatever experience you want. In this case, driving a car. So this person, go back, this person's driving a car as an imagined character, having an experience of driving the car on a road, but then what happens is the car could crash. And when the car crashes, the person, the real person who's wearing the visor, is upset. And he's trying his best, you know, the nerves are firing, the muscles are contracting, and person is furiously calculating what I should do next in this virtual reality, which is not really happening to him. So the Bhagavad Gita's explanation of our existence is similar to this, as I'll show you in a second. So why are we going ahead so fast, Shankar? Let's go back. Yeah, let's go to the next one. So now, imagine that the person never stopped playing this virtual reality game. When I say never, I mean not for a billion years or maybe longer, trillion years, assuming the person can live that long. Let's just assume that for a minute. If you played this virtual reality game for a gazillion years, as many zeros as you can put, then what happens is the person forgets that he is not the character on the screen. The person cannot accept that he is not that character on the screen. Complete identification with this alternative reality, an alternative self. So, the consequences of being in illusion, playing the virtual reality game too long, is that the person forgets his or her real self and thinks that whatever happens in the virtual world is actually happening to the person. Like I gave you an example of a car crashing. Because you're so absorbed in the game, thinks that this is my car and the crash happened to this to my car, which is not true, it's just virtual. Let's go on. So in this, I'm going to now draw parallels with the Bhagavad Gita's explanation of our existence. The body that we have has senses. These senses interact with sensual stimuli like sound, touch, taste, smell, form. That information gets transmitted to the mind, which is a subtle thing inside the body. The mind transmits that information to the real us, which is the jiva. The jiva is the soul. Literally it means in Sanskrit, he who lives, jiva. So, here, this is a radical concept. The Bhagavad Gita turns our understanding of reality, of our material reality, upside down. What's going on here is that the jiva is a spiritual spark, it's a soul, and the body and the mind are external to the jiva. When we stare at ourselves in the mirror, we get up in the morning, brushing our teeth, we look at ourselves, the person who stares back at us in the mirror is not us. It's external to us. The mind with which we think, which has the ability to feel, experiences happiness, distress, is not us. Whatever pain, suffering happens to the body is not happening to us per se, it's happening to the body. So while the material world is not virtual in the sense that it exists, whatever is happening in the material world is happening to the bodies. The soul is untouched by material things because it's not matter. It cannot be transformed in any way by matter. The trouble is, I'm misidentifying with the mind as being us. We think that whatever happens to these bodies happens to us. And that's how our illusion in this world is continuously being perpetuated. That's why we go from one body to another, and to another, and to another, and to another. So in this sense, the Bhagavad Gita Bhagavad Gita's explanation of ourselves is similar to a virtual reality. Whatever is happening to our bodies is not happening to us. We are not these bodies. And if we think we are these bodies, that means we are misidentifying with the mind and in gross illusion, which is pretty much how my day goes every day. But sometimes I think about this because I have to give a Bhagavad Gita class, and I come here and I speak these things like a learned savant of the Bhagavad Gita. So the illusion is thick. But in the temple, when we come here, this is an escape from illusion. Temporary, so be it, but it is an escape from illusion because we can call a spade, we can say what is what. By Srila Prabhupada's mercy. Then we can raise our heads above the water, think about these things for some time, and if we do this regularly and every day, then it becomes second nature. Then we can observe ourselves. We can become observers of ourselves. The soul has the quality, the power to analyze itself and to analyze its coverings, the body, the mind, the senses. So let's go on. So, to recap, we have been playing in the material world according to the Bhagavad Gita for time immemorial. We have forgotten who we are, and at death we change bodies and play as another character. So the death is just the cessation of this character, identity with this body, because it's not working anymore, and the new misidentification with a new body. Material pain and happiness are imagined to be ours only because we misidentify with the mind. If this identification is not present, we wouldn't have the experience of material suffering and pain. Just like the driver who is driving, crashing that car in the virtual reality, he realizes that, well, I'm sitting in this chair, this is really happening on the computer, well, then he wouldn't be disturbed. He wouldn't be having an experience of distress or happiness. This is why the Bhagavad Gita constantly says, be equal in joy and sorrow, happiness and distress. When you first hear this, it is incomprehensible. How is that possible? But the fact is, it's not happening to me. It's happening to my body, which is not me. Okay, let's go on. Like I said, none of this is actually happening to the jiva. So now there are rules by which the game of the material world works. Just like the computer game has certain rules. The objects of this material world, if they're not connected with Krishna, they all have an unequivocal effect on our minds, and that is they elicit desire and hate. This is a world of duality. This is a theme that we hear a lot in the Bhagavad Gita. What does it mean to say duality? Hot and cold, happiness and distress. A good example is the political arena. Half of this country right now supports one particular politician, the other half supports another particular politician. So some desire one and hate the other. Others desire one, hate the other. This is duality. This is the duality of the material world. If one wins, the other is frustrated, leading to anger. And the other wins, the other is frustrated, leading to anger. Factually speaking, both considerations are illusion. Both are illusion. We have nothing to do with this material world. In fact, all of us have been, according to this Bhagavad Gita's concept, politicians in the past. People have voted for us, and then we have died, taken on new bodies. We have supported this politician and that politician, and we participated in elections, and we have done all of this stuff, and we've been cockroaches and trees and birds and everything. We have explored all life forms in all the years we've been here. In this virtual reality, we have explored all characters multiple times, over and over and over again. That's why the Bhagavatam says, punah punah charvita charvananam, chewing the chew, over and over and over and over and over again. So this quality of the sense objects to suck us into this mess of desire and hate. I want something and I don't want something. And I want something else and I don't want. Somebody said something nasty to me, I'm obsessed about it. Somebody said something good to me, I feel good about it. We get sucked into this because of this intrinsic quality of sense objects in the material world. And as a result, we lose out on the chance to liberate ourselves from illusion. These sense objects interacting with the mind, the senses and ultimately the mind, is what keeps us locked in the material world. The next thing is that acting on our desires or acting on our hate, either way, it creates reactions, the law of karma. I don't have time to go through this, but the law of karma determines which virtual character we're going to take on next, which other body in the next life we're going to misidentify with. Okay, so this is the problem. Now, of course, the Bhagavad Gita lays out this very coherent, beautiful, logical ways, and yet it takes many years to actually understand this. At least it took me many years to understand this. Only now I'm beginning to. The reason for that, again, is that I live in illusion. You know, and only sometimes, like Prabhupada said, if I remember this, we fall into Krishna. Mostly we are in Maya. Sometimes we fall into Krishna. Some devotee is saying, well, Prabhupada, that devotee fell into Maya. So Prabhupada said, no, we fall into Krishna. Mostly we are in Maya. So anyway, let's go on. So how to stop playing this material game, this virtual reality game? The answer is very simple. So simple, in fact, that it might sound dubious in some ways. Here, that's it. But the caveat is here every day. There are more caveats. Hear from devotees. Hear from self-realized souls. So here every day, what the Bhagavad Gita, of course, which is what we are doing now. This is why this is so important. The Bhagavad Gita is our lifeline out of illusion. Because Krishna insists, reminds us, bangs on the table with fists. No, listen, this is what it is. Get out of this illusion. Jiva Jago. So Srimad Bhagavatam, chant and hear Hare Krishna. This is our process. And if we do this, this is enough to keep us out of illusion. If it's not enough to keep us on a regular basis out of illusion, it is enough to take us back home, back to Godhead in this life. So what I mean by that is that just as Maya, illusion acts in inscrutable ways, we don't really know how it acts. We are in this body and we're stuck. And Maya is not under our control, our beck and call. She's not going to bend to our will. Most of the time, we are bending to her will without even recognizing it. In the same way, when we chant Hare Krishna, because the Hare Krishna Mahamantra is Krishna himself, the controller of Maya, it acts in inscrutable ways as well. We are being purified without realizing it. One devotee, Madan Mohan Prabhu, was telling me yesterday, by chanting Hare Krishna, we are becoming divine. Our minds are being transformed without us realizing it, so that at the time of death, we can go back to Godhead, or we take our birth again, as devotees, as explained in the 6th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Is this the last slide? Okay, so what I'm going to do now is, since I said that we should hear, I'm in two minds. One idea is to read the Srimad Bhagavatam a little bit, which describes, I'll read a particular chapter that describes spiritual reality. It's good to hear it. What is the spiritual world like? What do people do there? Or we could have questions now because it's 5:30. So maybe take a vote. How many people want to hear the Bhagavatam? Or how many people hear the Bhagavatam? Most people want to hear the Bhagavatam. Okay. My problem is I can't make choices since my childhood, you know. If I have a menu in a restaurant, that's my worst nightmare because I want to eat everything. So this is the same thing now. We have the choice between prayers by Queen Kunti, or which doesn't really describe the spiritual world so much, but describes Krishna in beautiful ways. This is the first canto. Or we have a choice to discuss, to hear how the residents of Dwarka welcomed Krishna's entrance into Dwarka. It's really beautiful. Which really tells you what the spiritual world looks like. So maybe a show of hands, which one? Kunti's prayers or Lord Krishna's entrance into Dwarka? Lord Krishna's entrance into Dwarka. All right. No hands for Kunti's prayers. I don't understand that, but anyway. So, we just go through, I'll just read Prabhupada's translations of the verses one by one. And just hear, that's our process, not much else to do. Hear about spiritual reality, it is changing us, transforming us in ways we do not know. But it's good to hear, take the medicine. So, what's the background here is that Krishna, the Kurukshetra war's been done, Bhishma Dev was on the bed of arrows, he's passed away. And Krishna has returned after much difficulty because Yudhishthira and everybody else did not want to let him go. So Krishna has somehow convinced them to turn back. They almost came more than halfway to Dwarka from Hastinapur. He sent them back. And then he is poised at the entrance of Dwarka, on the outskirts of the city. So let's see. Suta Uvacha, Suta Goswami is reciting this. Upon reaching the border of his most prosperous metropolis, known as the country of the Anarkas, which is Dwarka, the Lord sounded his auspicious conch shell, heralding his arrival and apparently pacifying the dejection of the inhabitants. So the inhabitants are dejected because Krishna is away. This is one feature of the material, of the spiritual world. There is dejection. There is lamentation. But it's of a different kind, different flavor. Like I said, the material world and the spiritual world are similar in some respects, but only superficially. And this is a very deep topic. But the point is, we should remind ourselves when we hear these descriptions that this is not the material world. We could misconceive these to be material, but they're not. There is no atoms in the material world. So that conch shell is pure spiritual. It's actually conscious as Krishna is blowing it. Okay, so the white and fat-boweled conch shell being gripped by the hand of Lord Krishna and sounded by him appeared to be reddened by the touch of his transcendental lips. It seemed that a white swan was playing in the stems of red lotus flowers. The problem with material words is that it fails to they fail to capture spiritual reality. Now, how much can you explain how beautiful Krishna is? So, as a result, there are a lot of comparisons made to beautiful things that we are aware of in our unconsciousness. So here, the lotus flower comes up a lot of times in Krishna's pastimes, and you'll see it come up again. The citizens of Dwarka, having heard that sound of Krishna's conch shell, which threatens fear personified in the material world, this is the spiritual sound, Krishna's names, frighten fear, began to run towards him fast, just to have a long-desired audience with the Lord, who is the protector of all devotees. The citizens arrived before the Lord with their respective presentations, offering them to the fully satisfied and self-sufficient Krishna, who by his own potency incessantly supplies to others. These presentations were like the offering of a lamp to the sun. The sun doesn't need an offering of the lamp, right? The sun is the source of the light of the lamp, actually. So, but still we offer the lamp to the sun. So the citizens began to speak in ecstatic language to receive the Lord, just as wards welcome their guardian and father. And then is described what the citizens say, which I'll skip. Get to the city. Upon hearing their speech, the Lord, who is very kind to the citizens and the devotees, entered the city of Dwaraka and acknowledged all their greetings by casting his transcendental glance over them. As Bhogavati, so again another simile comparing the city, as Bhogavati, the capital of Nagaloka, is protected by the Nagas, so was Dwaraka protected by the descendants of Vrishni, Bhoja, Madhu, Dasharha, Arha, Kukura, Andhaka, etc., who were as strong as Lord Krishna. The city of Dwarakapuri was filled with the opulences of all seasons. So there's a lot of information here. So the city was filled with the opulences of all seasons. That means all seasons, you know, different seasons have different flowers, different fruits, different everything. They are all present simultaneously in Dwaraka. I was just in another great city, great, quote unquote, which is Boston, that beautiful city. Full of construction right now, big tall skyscrapers, concrete jungle, people rushing and scurrying here and there, trying to make a living. Not fun. I found that as I've taken to Krishna consciousness more and more, I don't like cities. Although I keep traveling to different cities and staying in hotel rooms because my work takes me there. But they're a nightmare. Boston is a dump, I'm sorry to say. Somebody has a... it's just dirty. Now look at Dwaraka, transcendental reality. Dwarakapuri was filled with the opulences of all seasons. There were hermitages, orchards, flower gardens, parks and reservoirs of water breeding lotus flowers all over. Again, seems similar to a nice material city, even in the material world, but it's not. It's different. We have to read Prabhupada's purports to really appreciate this point. And I recommend you go home and read if you're interested. Because Prabhupada's purports are a window into spiritual reality. The city gateway, the household doors, and the festooned arches along the roads were all nicely decorated with festive signs like plantain trees and mango leaves, all to welcome the Lord. Flags, garments, and painted signs and slogans all combined to shade the sunshine. The highways, subways, lanes, markets, and public meeting places were all thoroughly cleansed and then moistened with scented water. And to welcome the Lord, fruits, flowers, and unbroken seeds were strewn everywhere. In each and every door of the residential houses, auspicious things like curd, unbroken fruits, sugar cane, and full water pots with articles for worship, incense, and candles were all displayed. So this is the description of the city of Dwaraka. And then describe what the citizens do. There is an elephant, they have elephants going in a procession. The brahmanas are chanting all kinds of mantras. The brahmanas have flowers. And music is playing. Vedic hymns are being chanted. And you know, all the ladies are climbing on the tops of the roof of the houses to see Krishna. It's just amazing. It's a festival. Actually, the word festival is used here somewhere. There was a festival in the mind of the ladies. Tat ikshana mahatsavaha. When Lord Krishna passed over the public roads, all the ladies from the respectable families of Dwaraka, their respectable families, so they have to climb up the roofs to be able to see the male gentlemen. All the ladies from the respectable families of Dwaraka went up to the roofs of their palaces just to have a look at the Lord. They considered this to be the greatest festival. Krishna's beauty is described. Amazing verse here. As the Lord passed along the public road of Dwaraka, his head was protected from the sunshine by a white umbrella. So there is sunshine in the spiritual world. Although Bhagavad Gita says there is no sunshine, but this is a different type of sunshine. White feather fans moved in semicircles and showers of flowers fell upon the road. His yellow garments and garlands of flowers made it appear as if a dark cloud were surrounded simultaneously by sun, moon, and lightning and rainbows. So process that. So in other words, Krishna is like the cloud And simultaneously, you have the sun and the moon, which are never present in the material world, and lightning and rainbow, which is never present together, all simultaneously shining on this cloud. So what is that? Krishna is wearing a garland of flowers, which looks like two rainbows put together, rainbow colored, I guess, these garlands. And his head was protected from the sunshine by a white umbrella. The umbrella looked like the sun. And the feathered fans moved in semicircles. The circles looked like the moon. And his yellow garments appeared like lightning. So these are comparisons made for us because, and for, frankly, I find it difficult to imagine this myself, to process this myself. Although, you know, these analogies are present over and over again in the Bhagavatam. Again, to remind us, this is really something extraordinary, out of our experience. Anyway, I'll stop here. And if there is discussion, questions, then let's talk.
I really appreciated your analogy, and it reminded me of an article I read recently about young people who are so addicted to this virtual reality games that there is actually rehabilitation clinics like in China, different places, where they have to go so they can just kind of understand what the other reality is, which is still not the actual reality. So, yeah, so it's kind of like this whole material world is a big rehabilitation clinic in a sense, right? Just trying to...
But the material world is a virtual reality and the rehabilitation clinics are the temples of Krishna. That's where rehabilitation is occurring if you choose to go there on a daily basis. Anything else? Okay. Oh, Vishakha Mata, you have a question.
You used the word absurd for that person. That seems like a very strong word to use, because if you look at from his point of view, that's the only reality he knows for billions of years, so how could he think of anything else? So isn't it a little bit harsh to say absurd?
Well, okay, so the word absurd is not meant as an indictment of the person. It's a general term used for the general philosophical understanding that I exist, but still I will not accept that I am the soul. That's what I'm really getting at. So the concept that a lot of people have is that the soul business is absurd. There is no such thing as spirit. That what I can see, what I can perceive is what exists. But that leads to the absurdity that if material reality is the only reality, is what is all that exists, then my very existence is meaningless, it's absurd. How can I, if I'm just atoms, then how are atoms perceiving themselves? That's the problem you run into. Atoms don't have any emotions, they don't have any ultimate purpose, they don't have any relationships, they don't have any aspirations, good or bad, you know, harsh or soft terms, none of this means anything. These things only mean something if we have to, if we consider that we are something more than matter. And therefore people who go through lives thinking that they are matter alone are in an absurd position because they think that they matter, but still they accept that they are only matter. They refuse to accept, consider the possibility that there could be something else. So yeah, I mean, if there is no spiritual reality, if we are not the soul, if we are only the body, then our existence is absurd, is meaningless. This is certainly true. Anything else? Thank you very much, Hare Krishna.